third and final hour of your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. Representative Jim Nash is going to join us in the next segment. We've got a DFL deputy communications
socket wrench. What a socket wrench.
Who's got a history of saying really dumb things.
Yeah.
He said another really dumb thing.
Yeah, he said that basically that on election day, go to the polls, right, and take back the country, and then the next day, send the GOP to the guillotines. Basically behead the GOP.
Yeah.
That's what he tweeted.
Yeah.
And then,
it's funny.
Oh, sorry. This is jokes.
Just jokey jokes.
It's just jokes.
You know, this joke's about murder. And yeah. Then, you know, the USS Minneapolis St. Paul gets launched. Really amazing video up on the Justice and Drew Show page on TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. You want to check it out. Really, really cool.
It's crazy, man.
And he tweets, you know, I'm just bummed that our great city, that a murder boat is named after our great cities. A murder boat.
Like, how big of an adult do you have to be?
A murder boat?
Murder boat.
Yeah. What's it even supposed to mean?
Well, it's a what it boat means that murders is people. That he thinks that the people that are on that boat, that would be, you know, members of our Navy, are murderers. Oh, that's what it means.
No, you just can't leave the boat alone because it'll just go out and randomly start just destroying lives.
Yeah.
The boat will just get all stabby.
Murder boat.
Stabby boat.
Like if Michael Scott was making an action film instead of, you know, Threat Level Midnight, it'd be Murder Boat.
Murder Boat. Starring Steven Seagal.
So stupid.
A terrible movie.
All right, so this comes out of Lad Bible. There is everything to say that I wrote that wrongly.
No. It is Lad
Bible.
It is. You're correct.
A Bible for lads.
It is Lad Bible. I'm familiar with it. Every time I see it, I just think it's so dumb. It's like so goofy. It's just so goofy.
If you're struggling to lose weight or save money, this nifty little gadget could be the answer to your prayers. Amazon is now selling the Pavlok bracelet. Right? Shouldn't it be Pavlov?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Play on that.
Oh, Pavlok. I got it. There's a fine line between stupid and clever.
Pretty much. That's very Lad Bible.
Yeah. Our show is very much representative of the fine line between stupid and clever. Pavlok bracelet promises to help you sort out life, whether your issue is spending too much time on the internet, biting your nails, or oversleeping. So this answers your question of how you can program it. Basically, every time you step out of line, the strap will give you a 350-volt electric shock.
I don't know if that's a lot. Like, I don't know.
I don't either.
I assume it's a lot.
Just to give you a general reminder, what is... Okay, all right, so
like,
here,
what?
I don't know.
On, like, the scale of shocks, what's, okay. Like, ouch?
Here's your example. Here, now, you may not know this. I don't know. But I know, I'm pretty sure Drew and I do. So, think about a 9-volt battery. If you put a 9-volt battery on your tongue,
you know
what that feels like.
Why are you doing that?
So this is, have you ever done it before?
No.
Don't knock until you try it then.
Why would you do that?
All right.
Is this something that people do?
Is there anything that has a 9-volt battery in the studio?
I'm not going to put a battery on my tongue.
It's a rite of passage, Sam.
No, it's not.
You should have done this by now.
You should have done this.
Why would you do that?
Oh, are you 23 or 24 now?
24.
Yeah, you should have done it when you turned 21. At least by then.
He's right.
I was too busy doing shots. I was 21.
Of rosé?
Yes.
You're not good at doing shots.
No.
Shots all around.
Shots of Prosecco for everybody.
Merlot.
Pretty much. Very classy.
Shots of White Zinfandel for everybody. Where'd Sam go? She passed out. She's under the bar.
Yeah, she already had a glass of wine. She's passed out.
She had two shots of White Zin. Yes. No, so a 9-volt battery, you know the shock that it gives to your tongue. So 350 volts, I got to imagine, that does seem pretty extreme.
That's a lot of volts.
Sounds like a big number.
I'm reading here on the old Wikipedias.
The old wiki.
The old wikis. The voltages greater than 50 applied across dry, unbroken human skin can cause heart fibrillation.
Oh, I guess I shouldn't. That's 50.
No, so John, you'd be fine. You got a mechanical heart. It's fine.
All right. Yeah, more machine now than man. Let's see. Pavlok allows you to speak your reptile brain's language by adding an unpleasant element, a safe and harmless zap of electricity on your wrist, to what you have been taught to love. quickly conditioning your mind to associate an unpleasant feeling with your bad habit and stopping it altogether. There's another way you can go about doing this without having to use a device that shocks you. It's just develop a new habit. You know, develop a new habit right. of not eating. And I mean, we're using the example, not eating fast food. Because eventually, when you reprogram your brain and your passageways to eat other foods, then that desire eventually goes away. And then when you have fast food, it's like, oh, okay. I thought it sounded really good, but not nearly as good as I thought. Same thing right. with soda or yeah. trying to quit, you know, smoking. I would be curious to know if I could program it to where it shocked me if I wasn't, like, riding my bicycle at a certain speed. So when I'm riding, like, it causes me pain if I'm not working out fast enough.
I like that.
Because I often go shoot for the hills. I know I got to climb up them, but boy, going down so easy. The inventor of the device said, it feels like you were to, if it feels like if you were to touch a doorknob after rubbing your socks on the carpet.
Well, it doesn't hurt.
Well,
I mean, that's like
shocked.
A static shock.
Yeah, right. I hate getting shocked. It sucks. There's a real power in using a little bit of pain to help you break your bad habits. So far, reviews on the device have been fairly mixed, with some claiming it's helped them change their bad habits, while others have criticized its quality. One customer wrote, wristband is a little awkward, but it does allow for the contacts to be positioned closely to your skin for the best results. I've only used the button on the device to administer the shock. I can't comment on how the hand motion function works. The app is okay, but it does give some information and videos on how to beat whatever habit you're trying to break. At 100% on a decent charge, it's more than enough of a zap to get your attention. And somebody else said, I'm glad I bought it so far. I believe it's working. It's not going to cure a lifelong issue in a few days, so you have to stick to their plan to really have to really work on it.
I wonder, how does it know what you're doing, though? If it's just attached to, like, how does it know that you're eating, you know, a double Whopper with bacon?
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that.
As opposed to, like, a peach.
It just does.
that's not clear in this article.
This would be a good question for cybersecurity people.
I don't. Yeah. All right. Now I want to know Pavlok. How is it self? Maybe this whole thing it's hiding, burying the lead. Maybe it's self aware.
No,
I don't want a self aware wristband.
It's got like a microphone built in and it hears you. You know, place you or have fartchalupas.
No, it hears
and
you
a large
like
do.
It hears you placing an order. It hears you opening up a snack bag.
Oh, man, they were rejected on Shark Tank.
That's kind of, I mean, that, yeah. surprises
Is
me.
That a badge of honor?
Oh, no, sorry. I'm backing up. Let me back up. So I'm looking. Look at the photo. Look at this guy.
This guy.
Pavlok's CEO explains why he rejected Kevin O'Leary's offer on Shark Tank.
Okay.
Oh, so he turned it down.
So he turned it down, right. So he was seeking a $500,000 investment for 3.14% of his company. All the sharks came out citing the fact that Seth, had no credible studies proving the device actually worked. However, Kevin O'Leary was interested and offered Sethi a $500,000 loan at 7.5%. percent for 2 years and 3.14 equity. Sethi claims that he's sold $800,000 worth of the device so far.
Wow.
He declined without giving a specific reason why. Then when pressed by the sharks, he revealed that it was because he didn't want to partner up with O'Leary. That's pretty funny. You guys have watched Shark Tank, right?
I love Shark Tank.
I wipe out on
that show, man.
It's hysterical. Yeah, but I don't know. Were you able to find out how it knows? Is it self-aware?
I have no idea.
You have to program it, but would you program it with whatever you get in 10 feet of a Taco Bell? I don't.
It uses
proximity sensor.
It uses, right. like, geotagging.
Right. How does it work?
Well, I mean, you think about, like, shock collars. People use shock collars for training and stuff.
We're dumb. We're all dumb. It's not that hard. It's attached to your smartphone. So you have an app that's attached to the Pavlok. So if you wanted to program the app, you could actually do a location. I was joking, but you could actually do that. Yeah. Like you could program it to be like, you know, if I get within 10 feet, you know, of a Potbelly's, you know, White Castle, you know, but sometimes Arby's.
Sometimes those locations are not like too accurate, or like not, or they are a little bit too like big for the actual location. So what if you're just like driving by? You just try to drive by.
There's going to be some really negative unintended consequences with this device, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Something bad's going to happen.
Like, I understand the psychology. I think that it does work. I think that those little like are as the article. I think it was the article that said lizard brain said it's like. That works, punishing yourself through like a physical pain
negative conditioning.
Yes,
does work.
Yes, yeah, it definitely works. So I understand that part, like the psychological and physiological parts of it. But I don't know. I just think that there's going to be a lot of people that are accidentally shocked when they don't want to
be. You get sleep tracking and smart alarms, so you could wake up with the shock. Right?
Oh my gosh!
Hand detection for nail biting. So you know, there you go. It comes in a variety of colors.
Oh,
you
can
customize it.
Wow.
Oh, it's got a lot of primary colors are available. It's water resistant.
It better be.
Right.
What's it water resistant? Starts to rain and you're just like zzz, 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 zzz.
Yeah, so choose the habit you want to change. Wear your Pavlok throughout the day.
How did Carl pass away? Well, he ate a Whopper in the rain.
You know, you hear about, like, sometimes a certain cell phone model will have malfunctions and, like, literally blow up and burn up in your pocket. Mm-hmm. What are the odds of something like this blowing up and burning up on your wrist?
Far too high for me.
Yeah, because I feel like those cell phone companies would be a little bit better about testing their product and making sure that they're not going to blow up. Whereas, I mean, I don't want to, like, take too much credibility away from Pavlok Man, but I just feel like he's not going to have as much testing done as, like, a whatever big phone company.
It's got a little, it looks like the Harry Potter lightning bolt. It's got that on top of the thing, right? So you can set it to do it automatically, or you can manually deliver stimulus when you engage in your bad habit.
Oh, yeah.
So in the morning, if I screw
that thing with my fingers, bad
habit, yeah. Right? So
or
if I screw,
you can just manually be like, you know what, this I kind of like this.
But when I screw the show sheet up and I get all upset and mad, I can punish myself for messing up the schedule and putting the guest in the wrong spot.
We need to all three have one of these, but we need to control each other's.
That's a horrible idea. That's
you guys don't want that to happen.
That's a great idea.
We're going to end up. Why did you shock me? If you don't know, I can't help you.
That would definitely.
What was that for? You know, I'm so sorry.
You know what you did. John in New Prague. Good morning.
Yeah, I'm a product developer, and if it was me doing that, I'd be looking for biological responses like the lie detector test.
Okay.
We're looking for heart rate and sweat and stuff like that on your skin. So when you program it, you set it to program before you eat your hamburger that you don't want to be eating anymore, and then next time it sees those similar biological responses, it shocks you.
I gotcha.
But I get so excited when I eat a hamburger that my heart starts beating really fast. So what if every time I'm physically active, I get shocked? Then it's just punishing me for exercise.
I'd be looking for more than, you know, it's me anyway. I don't know about this. I haven't looked at Google or anything like that. But if it was me, I'd be looking for at least three indicators, not necessarily one where your heart rate spikes.
Oh, man, my heart rate spikes. I get a little sweaty. I'm really a very enthusiastic hamburger eater, so I don't know if it'll work out for
me. You should definitely not program your Pavlok based off of that.
Yeah. But I agree with you, John.
You've got far worse habits that you need to worry about than eating hamburgers.
True.
John, would you wear this thing?
I actually don't like to wear most of the smart technology stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't like having all the microphones and all that stuff around me. I just don't like it.
I'm with you. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
I would. If it was something that I felt like I couldn't, you know, get over, I wouldn't. I don't know. I need to know what it feels like first. I don't, you know, but I don't know. I'm good with trickery. I'm fine with trickery. It's mental trickery.
Yeah, you're tricking yourself into changing
a habit as opposed to like just legitimately changing the habit.
It's not really a trick. It's like you're literally being punished.
It's a life hack.
I don't know if I'll call this a life hack.
I will see your frustration with trickery and I will raise you life hack. That's what you're basically trying to hack yourself through pain.
Okay. I'll take it.
Bye. press. A playground makeover at St. Paul's Cherokee Regional Park is drawing criticism from some of the neighborhood parents. Noah Namovitz considers the park to be one of St. Paul's less heralded wonders.
It's a wonder.
A 100-acre blufftop oasis overlooking the city itself, but its rebuilt playground he's not pleased with. Everyone in the neighborhood was like, what is this thing? Referring to the 24-foot climbing structure Sky Tower.
They put a 24-foot climbing? That seems... Not smart.
It's really cool. It's got a tube. It's got a slide. Yeah, it's okay. I saw a picture.
24 feet seems pretty high.
It is pretty high.
It seems like you could fall. And...
It's so high. Well, they've got so it's so high the kids. Some kids are scared of it. Apparently, sure. Right? Yeah. Right. And not that I would be. Heights don't bother me at all. Everyone in the neighborhood, right, was referring to the Sky Tower, and he said one of the group's parents who have taken their concerns about the recent $342,000 overhaul to City Hall.
That's what I'm focusing on. They spent over $340,000 on playground renovation. Are you kidding me?
They're expensive. I know. I'm with you.
That's crazy.
But they are stupid expensive.
Apparently.
After attending community design meetings, Betsy Thompson expected a shady tree grove, rolling berms for toddlers to crawl over, and bench-style seating. Beth McConnell, who grew up going to Cherokee, thought it would be a place for her 1.5-year-old daughter with a variety of activities for children of different ages. However, the parents say the new Sky Tower, the 20-foot-tall climbing structure attached to a large cover slide, has left many a 5-year-old hanging from its mesh-like rope wall screaming for help.
Oh, my God. They put a terror device in this playground.
This is hysterical. Oh. O'Connell said that in a recent outing, in less than an hour, I saw 3 parents rescuing their kids. Or the kids were just uncomfortable going up there by themselves. One kid was 10, and the kid was like, oh, this is scary. The planned
24 feet is very high.
Yeah. Have you seen the picture? Oh, it's super. It's not in the, it's in the article. It is super tall. It sticks out. It looks awesome, though. The planned berms were never constructed. The tree grove was not planted, and a concrete walk encircling the site sits half finished, ending in a semicircle. The park does offer 2 benches and a picnic table, which is half of the seating area that was in the city's final concept designs. A tree-lined path exists only on paper. The new playground replaces the decades-old children's maze, complete with a slide and climbing areas that many parents agree outlived its popularity. Now, Claire Cloyd, a spokesperson for the St. Paul Parks and Rec, said the parks planners held community conversations leading up to the redesign and determined that a regional destination should get a regional amenity, but this was a bit out of the ordinary. It really just comes mostly down to this big, tall tower. And then you get into the budgeting questions, which we can talk about it in a bit, because there are people that are complaining how other parks of similar size that were actually better cost significantly less, even though the city of St. Paul is claiming that there was a very lengthy bidding process in all of this, and they did ask for community input before the park actually went and opened up. But the group of parents are very upset. They say the new playground lacks shade and skimps on seating, and that it pales in comparison to the upgraded play areas by the West 7th Community Center, as well as other locations where a variety of elaborate jungle gym environments provide activities for different age levels. Not the scary Tower of Terror, apparently.
St. Paul can't even get a playground right. Seriously. I mean, they're tasked with what's got to be the easiest thing in the world, right? Here's a playground, and they can't even, they screw that up.
651-989-5855 is the phone number. Coming up, we're going to talk with
Representative Jim Nash. He's going to be calling in just a moment. We're going to talk to him about this DFL Deputy Communications Director who has a history of putting his foot in his mouth, and he's firmly
planning. FM 103.5.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Welcome back. Your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew continues. Pete Hegseth from Fox News is going to be joining us shortly here in the next segment.
Real quick, sort of to put a point on the St. Paul spending $340,000 for playground renovation that included a 20-foot-tall terrace slide. in emails to residents, the city product manager said that 47%. of the $342,000 in total funding was dedicated to play equipment and play surfacing. Another 24%, about $82,000, went toward design and community engagement. 21% went to site work, 7.5% permitting and demolition. Residents have questioned why the design and community outreach costs were so high, right? And for the Longfellow project in Minneapolis, the agreement was much, much cheaper. And parents noted that at Cherokee Park, the city's three community outreach meetings and open house were largely advertised through flyers and posted at the park itself, leaving many neighbors in the dark about the planned improvements. So, I don't know. This was a lot of money spent. It looks like they did do some diligence and some due diligence in putting the information out there and making the public aware, but everybody was still very shocked when they saw the results of the efforts and then the scary 24-foot tall
the terror slide.
Terror slide. Slide of terror.
Well, a terror slide's probably better than a murder boat, John.
True story.
Probably better than a murder boat.
Yeah, slides aren't out there. I mean, they could terrorize, but not really going out there murdering people.
Right,
exactly. As far as we know.
Well, neither are boats, though. Right. And that's kind of the issue with this this deputy communications director for the Minnesota DFL, William Davis, who loves to put his foot in his mouth on Twitter and other venues. Most recently, when the video of the launching of the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul was making its rounds on social media, he decided that he was going to tweet about it and say, "I think it's gross. They're using the name of our fine cities for a murder boat."
Murder boat.
Murder boat. A lot of people were obviously rightfully upset with that, pointing out to him that boats don't actually murder anybody. So what you're actually doing is calling the men and women who serve on that boat, members of our Navy, you're calling them murderers.
Now, he since has deleted the tweet, at least that's my understanding. And if you want to go by TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page, you can check out a video of the launch itself, which is really incredible. It's intense, the way they drop the boat into the water and it rocks back and forth. It really is quite the spectacle. Pretty impressive.
Joining us now, someone who has spoken out about this several times via Twitter and actually called on DFL Chair Ken Martin to take some action, Representative Jim Nash. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
We're doing well. And this, understandably, this William Davis guy, you know, calling it a murder boat, this understandably upset you for very personal reasons.
It did. One, I was actually at the launch supporting our state and the legislature and the U.S. Navy. But two, because my kid is in the U.S. Navy. And I know for a fact that he's not a murderer, and he took issue with this as well. So, yeah, this is offensive. And I did call on Ken Martin to fire this guy because it's just uncalled for. Our amazing men and women in the Navy are there doing a job protecting the freedom that this guy utilizes to speak out loud. And, you know, I took issue with it.
Yeah, understandably so. Did you get any response from DFL Chair Ken Martin?
I did have a conversation with him. He did agree that it was uncalled for and didn't say what they were going to be doing yet. I think that they're going to meet and decide what to do. But, you know, the bigger issues are some of these. One, this guy doesn't understand what the Navy does and that as often as not, it's a peacekeeping mission that our men and women are out there doing, keeping the world safe. And just what a level of sacrifice is being made. You know, my friend Brian Scon was with me. He's part of the Navy League, and he's got two kids in the Navy. And we were there, and there were several other members of the legislature there. But, you know, and they all got it. The sad part was is the members of the legislature, both Senate and House in the state of Minnesota, that are from the naming cities, so Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Right.
There was not one single member of the legislature there. there was one Democrat from the House, John Hewitt, and then that was it for the state legislature, and then Congresswoman Betty McCollum.
Yeah, I understood McCollum was there.
Yeah, you know, this is about supporting the men and women of the Navy for on the boats and ships that are being named after our state. Brian and I were out in Groton, Connecticut last year supporting the men and women on board the USS Minnesota, the submarine. And that's what this is all about. It's supporting the Navy because the Navy supports us and they defend us and protect us. And this idiot, and I will call him an idiot, just wants to run off at the mouth and decide that he knows more than anybody else, and he's going to be enlightened and cute and funny and decide to speak poorly of our fighting men and women. That's uncalled for.
Well, and DFL, you mean to tell me you can't find somebody better than this socket wrench? I mean, October of last year, he tweeted, "Dems take back the country 11-6, 11-7, bring them to the guillotines." And it's like, okay, that's not funny. That's not appropriate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he got a pass on that, and then he goes
said it was just a joke.
Yeah, just a joke. So, look, if they don't do anything about it, then this guy, this idiot, is just a poster boy for the DFL. He's a communication director, for crying out loud. I mean, come on, how dumb do you, how dense do you have to be to comment being the communications director?
Well, I'll tell you, if this had been a Republican deputy communications director, one, it would be on every news channel. It would be on everybody's Twitter feed saying that this person has said something so outrageous that he has to be fired. And two, the party chair, I believe, would have acted much quicker and would have been very decisive, because we understand that this is not an acceptable behavior.
Right. Well, we've seen it happen before. There have been inappropriate things that have been posted by, you know, low-level staffers in some, you know, county BPOs or Senate district or House district BPOUs, like posted on their Facebook pages. We've seen this happen where an inappropriate thing, an inappropriate joke or a meme or an offensive meme or something like that, you know, gets posted by somebody on a Facebook group. And they're quickly ousted, and you know, statements are issued. We've seen it. I can think of two or three instances in the past few years where that's happened within the state GOP. You know, and it happens. I mean, you know, do people get access to these pages that they shouldn't have access to, and they post something they shouldn't post, and there are consequences. It gets dealt with. This is not an instance like that, though. This is not just some random person posting in a Facebook group. This is the deputy communications director on Twitter, you know, under his own Twitter account, and this is not the first time. That's the thing. John brought up the guillotine comment. Now he's calling it a murder boat, but, you know, those two examples aside, I mean, you know, anybody that's active in Minnesota political Twitter is familiar with this guy and the things that he posted. He is very provocative. He says a lot of controversial things. He gets into arguments and Twitter fights and things like that. It's pretty common. He's got a reputation on Twitter for being like that. And so why would we have any expectation that the DFL would take action based on his history and no consequences meted out so far?
Well, I think that this one on top of the other one, so it's aggregated, this one I think should put it over the top and should make it so that people recognize that this is unacceptable behavior, and that this guy deserves to be fired. You know, I'd
be happy with at least a comment. You know, I mean, at least a comment from somebody in the DFL going, yeah, we don't all think that, people in our Navy are murderers. That, just a comment.
Well, yeah, and as I said, my son, who is currently deployed on behalf of this idiot, saw the Twitter dust up over the weekend, and he texted me with some fairly choice words that aren't radio worthy, but... you know, he said, "Well, who is this guy, Dad? And why does he think I'm a murderer?"
No.
And you know, the same thing goes for Brian's kids. You know, they're not murderers. They're serving on a carrier and a destroyer out there, putting their lives on the line to defend this guy. And we don't expect people to bow down and worship the Navy necessarily, but understand and appreciate, and don't be stupid in what you're saying.
Just show some common sense. Just show some common sense, for crying out loud.
Yeah, and what I would encourage listeners to do is to watch the state DFL party chair's Twitter and the official party Twitter, and look for a statement and look for this guy to be fired. If he isn't, then I say light it up. Because I think that good and decent people with varying feelings on the military, but understanding the one truism that they are there defending our very freedom to live and breathe and speak our minds.
Right. And you know, not being sort of, you know, in an active wartime scenario right now, like 90% of what the military does is humanitarian.
Right.
It's the fact that people aren't aware of that absolutely blows my mind.
Before Jim Nash, before we let you go, I just want to make you aware, if you weren't on this, we are. We know that Governor Tim Walz is heading into the hospital for some minor surgery come Thursday, and that the power will be handed over to Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. And so we just want to let you know that we're going to keep an eye on it, just in case any shenanigans ensue while Ms. Flanagan is in charge of the ship. So we're on it.
You know, Peggy is actually a friend of mine. We don't agree on a thing, but we're friends. And I texted her and you know, told her to not to get too drunk with power, and she sent back a laughing. You know, this is just how government works at the federal level. If the president were to go under general anesthesia, mm-hmm. the vice president would.
I know you're friends, but this is what they want you to think.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I mean. I don't think it's going to be.
And I'm just deal. Being and I'm just being dumb.
She might declare justice in Drew Day. You know?
Hey,
you know what? That shouldn't be done either.
An official proclamation. I like it. I'm on board. Representative Nash, thanks so much for calling in, man. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
We're going to talk with Pete Hegseth from Fox News. Hey, did you hear Ilhan Omar, the representative, is back in the news again?
Well, it has been about a week.
She's blaming Donald Trump for the problems with Iran.
Oh.
It's Trump's fault. Uh-huh. It's not the...
They were so nice before 2016. They were like our best friends.
They were so great. And now Trump just got up in there and got up all in their faces and all undoing the deals and stuff.
5 FM.
Second, your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. Tomorrow on the show, Jesse Kelly joining us at 8:35. Looking forward to that.
Very pleased to welcome from Fox News, Pete Hegseth. Good morning, sir.
Morning, guys. How we doing?
You know, I was doing fine, but now I'm reading just how upset the left is after finding out that apparently the A-lister actor known as Kevin Sorbo is not clearly in the left's camp. It makes me laugh when, I mean, I love, did you see the tweets that Kevin?
No, I didn't see it. What was it?
Oh, these are fantastic. So actor Kevin Sorbo's three tweets about sex, abortion, and immigration set the internet ablaze. A party that supports abortion over life, illegal aliens over its citizens, and refugees over its veterans is going to lecture me on morals? I don't think so. If women are upset at Trump's naughty words, who in the hell bought 80 million copies of 50 Shades of Grey? Yeah. Yeah. It makes me laugh when you got a guy like Kevin Sorbo that really hasn't been relevant for the longest period of time. You know, nobody really thinks about him. He tweets his opinion on this stuff. Oh, Kevin Sorbo. Oh, I can't believe it. Oh, he's not one of us. It just, you didn't care about him until he tweeted the... Anyways, good morning, Pete.
We also haven't been paying attention for the last, I don't know, decade, because we've had Kevin Sorbo on our show multiple times, and he's a known conservative.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the surprise is, but you're right. The orthodoxy is so deep that anyone steps out of line who's ever worn makeup in front of a camera, and it's unacceptable. So, isn't he Hercules? You know,
yes.
I mean, Hercules should be with us. My goodness. So, at least he internalized his character.
Well, I certainly hope he doesn't plan on going to Harvard, because I don't think he's going to be able to get in.
Oh, my goodness. That really is infuriating. And that is what happened. I don't know how to pronounce his last name again. Kyle Cashew, I think it is. I mean, the fact that he was admitted, a guy who survived the Parkland shooting, who's a conservative, who's got a 1550 on his SAT and a, like, 5.6 weighted GPA average. He's smart as all get out, you can tell. He gets admitted. They dig up some old stuff, what he wrote on a private document when he was 16, and Harvard rescinds it.
Yeah.
This is the same place where they let in, you know, they'll bring in former felons and others because their lives have changed and they're turning them around and they want to be diverse and they want to set an example. If you're a conservative, there is no forgiveness, ever.
No, No. If you're a conservative, your life must be destroyed. Everything around you must be destroyed. If they were being consistent and they were saying that your past actions don't reflect the moral character that we want to have in our students, then they wouldn't be turning, or they wouldn't be letting in ex-felons. You know, they wouldn't be letting in people that actually did things that caused harm to other people. Kyle has not caused harm, to the best of our knowledge, to any other person. You know, he was 16 years old. It was a private chat where they were clearly joking and trying to one-up and outshock one another, because 16-year-olds, breaking news, are idiots.
Yeah.
They're dumb. They do stupid things. And nobody should have their life destroyed or life ruined or college plans, you know, swept out from under them because of a stupid thing they did when they were 16 that did not harm a single person.
No, I mean, his sin is being a supporter, having gone to Marjorie Douglas High School and then being a supporter of the Second Amendment. I mean, to the left, that is unacceptable. If you're not David Hogg and the others coming out of there becoming hardcore left-wing activists, then you've learned the wrong message. This guy's actually Kyle was very sensible and remorseful and thoughtful and introspective in the way that he interacted with Harvard after the fact, because it was a hit job. This was former classmates wanting to take him down. He took it seriously. Ben Shapiro wrote about this, is where I saw it, and he wrote, you know, are the colleges irredeemable? And I think they are. I think our Ivy League institutions are there's no coming back from where they are.
No.
We have to start our own. We really do. Because
yeah.
Our kids are not going to get anything worth value.
Well, look, I mean, you can kind of also apply that to just the public school system. I mean, you would have to upend it completely. You'd have to, you know, pull out those roots that have been there for decades now, and it's nearly impossible to do that. You're right. We have to go and start our own. It's unfortunate for Kyle to have to be the one that we end up seeing this example of, but I continue to make the comparison of, you know, we're outside the matrix right now and we're seeing everything. There is no hiding of these views anymore from anybody, whether it's the communications director, William Davis for the DFL and his yep. thoughts about murder boats, or whether it's Harvard University, regardless of their ability to be able to rescind his acceptance, what they're allowed to do. We all know the reason and justification is completely bogus, and I'm glad that Harvard has continued to expose just what these liberal institutions of universities have become. Because for far too long, we were sort of left with the Katie Pavliches, which is how she came on our radar in the first place, who would be willing to go on local radio shows and talk about what they learned in college from their professors. Now we see this firmly on display. Unfortunately for Kyle, you know, he had to be the sort of the flashpoint of that exposure.
Yeah, you know, when I went to college 15 years ago at Princeton, which is a liberal place, I knew that as a conservative, I was a bit of a novelty. I knew I was going into a place that wasn't, but I wasn't all that political either. Conservatives are not viewed as novelties or something nice to be had on the shelf now. They're seen as the enemy to the body politic of the university. And that's because I'm writing a book on this right now. We have existential differences as a country. I mean, I don't know if these irreconcilable differences can actually be reconciled or how. All I know is that we have to try. And we can't do it by playing the same game we played. I mean, this is literally find a private school you can afford that teaches values. Homeschool your kids. Go to Liberty University. Go to College of the Ozarks. Help people start other universities, because you can send a smart conservative to an Ivy League school, and that's fine, and they'll be salt and light at some level. But you don't change a culture that way. You don't take a culture back that way. And from education to the media, it's almost all gone. And I think that's part of the reason why you see 100,000 people signing up for Trump's, you know, campaign rally tonight, is they realize they feel like they're losing their republic, and there's one guy standing athwart it. And they know that if he could be their shield, they might have a chance. But even look at what they've been able to do to him as far as trying to tear him down. So we are at a very real cultural flashpoint for the soul of our country. And I don't say that to try to be overly hyperbolic about the moment we live in, because we usually overemphasize our moment and we don't look at history and the things But we now have a place where Republicans and Democrats agree on almost nothing.
I know. It's bizarre.
The core of our country.
It's bizarre where we are right now. And it's bizarre, you know, it's hyperbole, but when you look at the things that the Democrats are advocating for and attempting to advance, when you look at their agendas, what they're saying they're going to do when they get into office, we are talking about a radical and fundamental transformation of the foundations of this country, of the foundations of our economy and the things that we, you know, they are talking about a massive transformation, and it is very cultural in nature. And a lot of the stuff, you know, this Kyle Kashev thing is just a little microcosm of the type of world that they want to live in, where, you know, if you say the wrong thing when you're 16, sorry, the rest of your life's screwed, unless you're a Democrat. Unless you repent and you cleanse yourself of the sins of the past by joining the Democrat Party, then you can be the governor of Virginia.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
It's totally fine.
Again, looking at history, and this is what troubles me the most, is the big things that we fought over, like race, like racism, like slavery, like women's suffrage, like civil rights. Those were obvious things that, because of the way we were 100, 200 years ago, America got wrong. And it took a really long time for us to right those wrongs and head in the right direction. We're not fighting about race and gender right now. We're fighting about, you know, our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution and the rule of law and things that have nothing to do with the things that divided us in the past and everything to do with the foundation of who we are as a country and our principles. That's what's more scary about this moment.
Speaking of our country and principles, Representative Ilhan Omar said that none of this issue with Iran would be happening if Trump didn't back out of the Iran nuclear deal. She said the U.S. should get back to negotiations with Tehran and reinstate that Iran nuclear deal. As Drew said, you know, Iran was so nice and played so well and was such a great group of people before Trump got in office.
Oh, they were wonderful. When Ben Rhodes was telling us that they were the new moderate Iranians and we should just work with them and it'll be fine. I mean, think about we can unpack Ilhan Omar's statement a lot of different ways, but the mindset that she uses is, and hers is even worse, but amongst those on the left is, you know what, let's just quietly agree that Iran should get a bomb because they're going to get one. You know?
So right.
Just kind of, we don't have any options to stop them. So just, come on, let's live in a world where, and listen, they're going to have them, and we're going to have them, and America's not going to be the top in the world, and we can't do all these things. So there's this inevitable attachment to decline or to defeat, and they're okay with it because they never thought America was good in the first place. That was the Obama mindset as well. Like, well, the Iranians are just good people too, and they don't really mean what they're saying when they want to wipe people off the map and death to America.
No,
so let's just make a deal.
It's fine.
Fine then.
Yeah, they're just going to use it for power. You know, I don't really want to go blow stuff up. All that stuff about Israel is just a lot of just hullabaloo.
It's just jokes.
Well, it's just jokes. It's the same with the artificial islands in China and what they're doing in Taiwan and what they're doing with Hong Kong. Oh, you know, just they're doing it peacefully. They explain away the expansions of power of ideologies that are utterly antithetical to American and free values. Communist Chinese, Islamist Iranians want to dominate the world if they can. They're in the earlier stages of attempting to do so, and we can't let them do it because history's not over.
I do want to get your thoughts on what in the Sam heck is going on over near Iran. I know a lot of people, I read a great article sort of comparing what's been happening with the tankers, with the great tanker war going back to the 80s. Senator Tom Cotton talked about the unprovoked attack on commercial shipping warrants a retaliatory response. What are your thoughts on what's been happening, those tanker attacks, and what, if any, our responses should be?
I agree with Tom Cotton, and not because I want a war with Iran. We don't. But you don't have to go. You don't have to go to. When you strike someone, it doesn't mean you're going to full out war. What it means is, you know, it's like a bully in the street. If someone doesn't step up and punch them in the mouth, they're going to keep bullying everyone as they go past. And in this case, we have put the screws to them economically. They're feeling the heat. They got rid of the inflation index. They don't even report that number anymore because it's so bad. Their economy is tanking. So they're acting out to try to create a space where they might have an opportunity to get back to the table and get the sanctions relieved. And that means you've got them where you want them. And a retaliatory strike that says, stop now, this ain't happening anymore, yeah, they could attempt to hit us somewhere else in some other way, and they will. They always do. I mean, they've been doing that for decades. You've been killing Americans on the battlefield. This is what they do. So the right moment to send that bold message is precisely the right thing to do, and you don't have to get dragged into a larger war because of it.
Boy, that's a tough one. I mean, I don't disagree. Don't misunderstand. I agree with a lot of what you said, but obviously from a politically advantageous standpoint, that's really tough for President Donald Trump. If he were to go and sanction some type of action like that right now, especially heading into this election, we all know it's unavoidable, but we all know what the commentary would be around it.
Sure, it would, and which is totally false commentary because he ran as the first Republican effectively to be a non-interventionist, to get us out of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's where his gut is. But he's also a strength guy. I mean, Obama was a speak softly and carry a little stick guy, and Trump is a speak loudly and carry a big stick he doesn't want to use, but he will use if he needs to. And that's the kind of America that the world needs. So I think you have to actually, I don't know if you can plan what it's going to be. Maybe you can. And you certainly could plan where you want to attack and why, and the Pentagon's got those options. But maybe you also loosen the rules of engagement of local commanders in the Strait of Hormuz and others to say, we have protocols, and if the Iranians violate them, they will pay the price at some point.
Yeah, and, yeah, that's, you know, all that all sounds really good, Pete, but wouldn't it be just easier to keep writing them checks?
It sure would, yeah.
Wouldn't it be easier to deliver, you know, pallets of cash?
It would have been easier to just keep delivering boats of cash to the Barbary pirates, too, back in the early 1800s. But Thomas Jefferson said, no, we don't pay ransom. We will go to your shores of Tripoli so that we will be free of this. This form of tyranny. I mean, the same principle applies here.
Oh, you can't go look at stuff from the past. I mean, it's not like that happened with Kyle. You know, I mean, come on, Pete, whatever.
You're right. Sorry. I stand corrected.
Pete Hegseth, man, great chatting with you. Good to have you back on Tuesdays, and we will look forward to having you back on next week.
You got it, guys.
Thanks. All right, take care, buddy.
We may have to get to this in tomorrow's show, Drew. I know you found it out of WTOP, but the estimated 10,000 people that are in Washington, D.C. that are spies.
It's a fascinating little read, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah, there's 10,000 spies in D.C.
That live
they
there.
Walk among
there's
them.
Residents.
It's crazy. Yeah. All of D.C. spies?
Yeah,
all
like spies. People, you get like checked out at Whole Foods there. Your person working your register.
Could be a spy.
Probably a spy.
Whoa. Your Uber driver.
Probably a spy.
Spy.
Uber drivers would be like the best spies.
Seriously.
Well, that's part of what the article talks about is how it's a lot of the, it's people you wouldn't suspect.
That's right.
That's what makes for a good spy.
When I go to DC, you. I'm a spy.
I see you, Uber drivers. I see you. I don't.